1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Mini ceasefire now extended 2 days beyond tonight, both sides releasing more captives. ABC's Matt Gutman in Tel Aviv says there's still a lot of questions.
We don't know much about the health of the remaining hostage, and that is a huge bone of contention for Israel. They are demanding that the Red Cross be given access to the remaining hostages. We believe it's around 150 at this point. A lot of them are men.
A man police say shot and wounded three college students of Palestinian descent has pled not guilty. He's been denied bail. Police accusing him of attempted murder, saying he shot those students out for a walk in Burlington, Vermont over the weekend. Hundreds turning out to salute Rosalynn Carter, whose body is lying in the Carter Center in Atlanta. Former First Lady's family has begun 3 days of memorials following her death. Her grandson, Jason Carter.
They did the things that they did in their lives, but they came back to this place where they lived and loved, and they didn't change.
This is ABC News. Hackers taking a hit on some medical facilities across the country.
The American Hospital Association counted more than 220 cyber attacks targeting hospitals and healthcare systems in the first half of 2023. The latest incident is forcing hospitals around the country to divert ambulances to other healthcare centers. Ardent Health Services owns 37 facilities, and a computer network outage caused by hackers is reportedly affecting its hospitals in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Idaho. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
There is a four-legged creature food pantry in Los Angeles.
The pantry was set up by Dr. Quan Stewart, a veterinarian who treats animals living on Skid Row. Dr. Stewart says the biggest challenges homeless people have with their pets are medical care and food.
But I've seen them sacrifice their own meals to feed their pets first. And occasionally there are services that will come through and unload dog food, but it's inconsistent.
Dr. Stewart says food donations are coming in. In the pantry's first week, 28 bags of dog food were given out. Blake Trolley, ABC News.
Andy Field, ABC News.
What is the meaning behind Movember?
It isn't just about the mustaches. Movember is meant to raise awareness about men's health, prostate or testicular cancer or suicide, and also be a reminder to see your doctor. Movember started in Australia in 2003. It's now observed in more than 20 countries. So guys, remember to see your doctor, and however you celebrate this month, all of us with your local Civic Media radio station wish you a wonderful holiday season. I'm Terry Barr. Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you can catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on Lake Air Radio, WLAK, 1260 AM in Amory. Your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
The fastest hour in radio, serving truth, justice, and equality with every slice. Outside the Pizza Box with Pizza Box Mike. Friday nights at 7 on Lake Air, 1260 AM, WLAK.
I was crossing the street when I met the love of my life. I chased after her. Nothing would stand in my way. Not the dog walker, nor the hot dog vendor. Finally reaching her, I asked, "What do you call that amazing smell?"
It's Gain Flings.
Gain Flings. My love had a name, but more importantly, it had a scent.
Fall in love with Gain Flings. Seriously good scent. Gain Flings with 50% more freshness ingredients versus leading bargain detergent.
A person's freedom of speech. Buzzel faced up to 3.5 years in prison and up to $10,000 in fines if he had been convicted. A conservative pressure group is turning up the heat on Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. The same group that targeted Voss with a $100,000 ad campaign says it's launching $250,000 worth of new ads. The Wisconsin Elections Committee wants lawmakers to impeach Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks with a comeback win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks were down 26 points, but came back to win 108-102 over the Portland Trail Blazers at Fiserv Forum. It was the largest come-from-behind win in the NBA so far this season. At one point, the Bucks' Giannis Antetokounmpo scored on a tip-in, then ran the length of the court and blocked a shot for a basket by Portland head coach Adrian Griffin.
He's one of the greatest players to play this game. and he showed it tonight.
The Bucks play in Miami tomorrow night. NFL, the Packers are back at practice today. Their next game is Sunday night at Lambeau Field against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, yesterday, the Chiefs were down 14-0 to the Raiders. They came back to win, though, 31-17. College football, the Badgers finished out the regular season with a 28-14 win in Minnesota. Running back Braylon Allen rushed for 165 yards and scored 2 touchdowns.
It was good. I'm just happy that we won the game and the team played well.
That's Wisconsin running back Braylon Allen. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear tonight with lows around 6 above. Winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high of 26. Tomorrow night, lows around 20. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 15.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
I work for you. Join us daily at therickssmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Argentinian president-elect Javier Milei, he's in the U.S. today, I think in New York somewhere, going to meet with the IMF and some Biden administration folks. Not meeting with Biden, but with the administration. Donald Trump says he's going to go to Argentina to meet with Milei. And you go, this is where crazy comes together. Interestingly enough, though, where the story gets even better. Grover Norquist, the guy who said that he wants government so small in this country that he can drag it in the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub, he's taken a victory lap in Argentina. In fact, I guess he's there because one of their sister groups, you know, to Americans for Tax Reform, this Argentine Taxpayers Association, kind of funded by them. So you go, why are we funding bad ideas across the globe? Why are we exporting our crazy? Isn't the world crazy enough? And here to share some thoughts on just how bad things could get in Argentina, I've asked our good friend Mateus Vernango to come talk with us. Mateus is a professor of economics at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you for having me, Rick.
So let's start with just how crazy is this guy? I mean, I read something that said if he raises taxes, he's going to cut off his arms.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, he said that, you know, if anybody, you know, runs a debt, next year we're going to have a surplus. And if anybody, you know, spends more than what we have, he's going to fire everybody. And, you know, it's a funny thing. I mean, he's going to fire a lot of people in Argentina. So the situation is not easily resolved, you know, with things like that. He's out of control in ways that, you know, would make Trump seem calm and composed. That's what we're talking here. He loses it on TV, and he would say things that, you know, you'll be fined if I repeated the things that he says out loud on TV. He's blipped all the time, so, and he completely loses it, you know, several times. So it's well known. So he lost it right before the election in an interview, and he was shouting about the voices of people talking in the studio. And there was somebody that worked there, you know, that had a phone, of course, you know, behind the cameras. And then they showed the studio is empty, dude, you know. So the voices are in your head. So that's the level that we're talking about. He, you know, he said two things, you know, I'll say how strong you know, his election was, he won for, you know, with a difference of, you know, 11 points, you know, percentage points. So a very strong sort of showing. He said two things that in Argentina, if you say those things, you're dead. He said that he hates Diego Maradona, you know, and he said that the Pope is the representative of the evil one on earth. And, you know, and the church did have, you know, particularly, you know, some priests that, you know, in poor neighborhoods. had organized masses and, you know, against him, so explicitly, you know, because of this sort of thing. So, and still he won, you know, handily, you know.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is, look, any politician, you know, standing for re-election in a country that has 140% inflation. I mean, we're losing our mind over what is it? What's the inflation rate been here? I guess total about 19%, they said?
At this point, 3.5%.
Well,
so we have no inflation. I mean, it's 140 plus. You have to, you know, the average growth rate over the last decade is 0.2. So the economy has sort of been flat and stagnated over the last decade. So it's a lost decade, and with accelerated inflation. So things are somewhat dramatic.
Yeah, and you got 40% of the country living in poverty. You've got real problems. Yeah. Let
me just put a footnote there, because people have a tendency to. So Argentina, that's the local poverty line, which so it went from 25% a decade ago to 40%. But that's, you know, each country defines its own poverty line. So if you look at the World Bank, so I wrote something for with a friend in a newspaper in the Philippines, and we were trying to explain to people in the Philippines what's going on. And of course, people in the Philippines don't know anything about Argentina, and so they tend to think that this, you know, 40% of poverty is a poor country. But if you look at the World Bank measures, so that are comparable, similar measures, the World Bank does measure. So by the $365 per day measure, Argentina has 2.5% in poverty. The Philippines has almost 20%. And so, you know, it is a very bad situation of a country that it's an upper middle income country. So you still have people immigrating from Bolivia, Peru, and Paraguay into Argentina. So it is dire, but it's not a poor country by any sort of measure. But it's a dramatic crisis. It's a meltdown of the economy, and it's the second meltdown in 2 decades.
Now, the reason I bring it up, because I don't think most Americans know much about Argentina either. So let's not just blame the Philippines for not knowing anything. I don't think we do either. But for me, the message of someone who, this guy's literally crazy, you know, talks to his dogs and does all kinds of other weird things that I find. You know,
and the proposals are very crazy. I mean, he has proposals that would make any sort of right-wing libertarian in the U.S., Grover Norquist, would be sort of afraid of him. You know, he wants a market for human organs. So if you want to sell your whatever, you have two of those. So if you have two of something, you can sort of sell it. There are little chances that he will do some of these things. Yeah, but certainly he has proposed a series of very crazy things like closing the central bank, dollarizing the economy. Some are absolutely insane. He is also, I should say, peculiarly, because he says he's a liberal and loves Hayek and Friedman and all of those things, but he's very much for authoritarian governments. He does praise the Argentinian dictatorship, which ended 40 years ago. And is very harsh on abortion rights. So he said that Argentina has legal abortion passed in Congress. So it's not a court decision. So it's a law that passed by majority in Congress. And he says that he's going to try to overturn that. I'm not sure he will have the votes in Congress, but you know, but that's the agenda.
No, but he's described himself as an anarcho-capitalist. Yes. Which plays into, sell your kidneys. Because, you know, at the end of the day, what I fear we're going to see again is that pendulum swing from, you know, what is socialism or, you know, the commons towards privatize everything, fire sale across Argentina. And not just Argentina, but a lot of poor countries or struggling countries. Because, hey, we need capital now. And I've seen this kind of stuff happen in other places. Working people get screwed badly in these scenarios.
So I'll say two things, that I think are important in this context. So in the 90s, we sold out the oil company that was a national oil company. Argentina had large amounts of natural gas, and it was self-sufficient. That was privatized for tiny amounts of money. The Spanish company, it was bought, you know, the beauty of this, it was privatized. But who bought it? A national company owned by the government of Spain.
Yeah.
So we had a state company, but it was a foreign state company. What did they do? They milked all of the, you know, already existing infrastructure, used all of the gas, exported it most of the time, and didn't do any prospection and investment, nothing. So finally, after several years, we were close to getting this in Vaca Muerta, which, you know, the literal translation is dead cow. In this place, we have shale oil and shale gas and large amounts, and lithium, I should say. I should say also our friend Elon Musk, very interested in the election of Milei in Argentina, and not just Trump. And he says already, we're going to privatize it. So what we're going to do is we're going to privatize it again, you know, after the cost it had, you know, to renationalize, do the investment. We just finished a gasoduct so that, you know, we can reduce the imports of natural gas. And this is, again, going to be all sort of dilapidated for, you know, probably some foreign company buying it and, you know, and getting the resources. So,
yeah, but isn't that the message? Isn't that privatization, you know, whether it's turnpikes or parking or gas? I mean, you know, I look at the Indiana Turnpike as, our cautionary tale. You sold it off to a foreign company. They ran it in the ground, and then you had to invest back into it to sell it again.
Yeah, I know. There are certain things that, you know, are associated to well-being, national well-being, and so in which foreign firms and private corporations don't do the sort of investment that it's needed, because it's heavy, large sort of amounts of investment, and the return is very long run. So they don't have the sort of time span to do those things. So the state, that's, again, we talked always about that. It's one of the myths about the American economy, that, you know, it's all corporations and private agents and the, you know, whatever they call it, the job, you know, makers, or, you know, the, you know, it's not job makers, but that, you know, people that employ people with, you
know, job creators.
Job creators. There you go. Sorry. And, you know, when a good chunk of this stuff that it's central for the job creators to be able to do stuff is, you know, at the end of the day, that, you know, you have the, you know, visible hand of the state behind helping. It is, you know, I don't want to throw a lot of praise on Obama, but, you know, but Obama, you know, when the famous phrase that he said and was sort of chastised, because he said that if you have this, you didn't make it alone. And, you know, and you didn't. That he was absolutely correct on that. You know, people do live in societies, and, you know, and societies provide lots of, you know, of services, public goods that, you know, allow them to do those things. So privatization will be sort of a brutal thing. Also the exchange. So next year, expect a significant depreciation at the beginning of the peso, and a large reduction of the real wages in Argentina. So he also is going to do a big, big fiscal adjustment. And so we're going to have very, very high unemployment. So the first year, he's going to be very rapidly, very unpopular.
So what, you know, as an economics professor, you know, thinking about a country with 140% inflation, what would be a better path than slashing the size of state spending, privatizing everything, causing the kind of mass chaos that you're talking about, you know, massive unemployment, you know, gutting, you know, investments, you know, because we know what this is going to be painful for working people. And look, the unions and social organizations in Argentina are already vowing to fight it. But yes, you know, if he's hell bent on it, is there a way for them to stop this? You know, given the fact that he already probably thinks he is the king,
he will. I mean, people will be in the streets. I, you know, as I said, he will be very unpopular soon. There are alternatives. You know, not that, you know. So inflation, the fiscal deficits in Argentina are not that large. They're, you know, probably not larger than, you know, in terms of the size than the U.S. deficits, 5-6% of GDP. So that's not the issue. What Argentina, the problem of Argentina is not a fiscal problem. The problem of Argentina is a dollar problem. We don't have dollars. We didn't export a lot sufficiently to accumulate reserves. You know, every country in the world, you know, the U.S. is the only exception, because the U.S. has and produces its own dollars. But, you know, China is sitting on top of $3.2 trillion of reserves. Brazil has $360 trillion of reserves. Argentina doesn't. Argentina is close to, you know, it has whatever it is. The you know, the reserves are 15%, $15 billion or something like that. Once you take the things we owe, you know, it's negative, actually. By the way, he did promise he would stop dealing with China, and had to backtrack immediately on that, because part of the sort of countries that have given us money, it's China. Argentina was paying the IMF, which is a sort of an incredible thing, not with dollars. We were paying it with yuan, with renminbi, with the Chinese currency, because we didn't have enough dollars to pay. And that's unprecedented in the history of the IMF. And so how do you stop an inflation of 140%? And what caused this inflation of 140%? When you don't have any dollars, you know, and, you know, you have to make these payments, a lot of people say, well, you know, and the interest rates in Argentina, I should say, were kept very low. So in the case of Argentina, I always say it's one place where interest rates should have been higher. So the depreciation of the peso is much higher than the interest rate in pesos. So if you hold dollars, you'll be more protected against inflation than holding pesos. You know, the interest rate in pesos is very low. It's below inflation. The depreciation of the peso, very large. So you want to hold dollars. So everybody buys dollars. That's, you know, once your currency depreciates, the price of everything that it's imported, and Argentina imports a lot of things, goes up. And so wages are lower. We do have strong unions. That's a good thing that we do have. And so unions go and battle for higher wages. But, you know, what happened with higher wages? They also push up prices. So you end up with a spiral. And so what we do have is very high inflation because of that. How do you stop that? You have to stop the exchange rate. So you have to stop. Somehow you have to get the dollars. And that's what he's doing here. He's in New York talking with the IMF, trying to, negotiate not to pay enough and perhaps get some additional dollars, hoping that we're going to have a better year in terms of exports and accumulate a little bit of dollars. So that would be the sort of thing to do. It has nothing to do with slashing spending or anything like that. But yeah, it's unlikely that that would happen. So if you ask me, what are they doing? You know, and they are, what they're doing is essentially what Republicans do here. They're not interested in constructing anything. They're interested in destroying things. If you break things, it was Friedman's sort of idea. He called it, you know, the starve the beast. You let them spend, but cut the taxes, and, you know, and then complain that, you know, they don't have enough money to pay for all of these benefits, and then we cut the benefits. So the idea is to create havoc, because in the havoc, they can destroy all of the institutions that still exist, of the era of the welfare state, which even in a middle-income country like Argentina are important to give people a decent amount of well-being. Now, if you have a problem in Argentina and you go to an emergency room, it's for free. Nobody will charge you for, you know, we have a national health system. So it's obviously, you know, not top-notch, but, you know, nobody goes broke because they don't have access to health. That's civilized, I would call it. So the strategy of people like Trump, of Milei, of Bolsonaro in Brazil, is to destroy things, not to build things. And then so that's the commonality, I would say.
Scary times ahead. But again, this isn't a new movie. I fear we're going to see lots of pain and suffering out of this if this guy does what he says he's going to do. But Mateus, as always, I appreciate the thoughts, the input. Good stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our good friend, Mateus Fernando. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Is extreme austerity the future? Is that a good thing? I don't think so. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this is one of those things, again, you know, the war between capital and labor, public and private. It's just not in Argentina or Brazil or places like that. It's right here at home. And you've got the Grover Norquists of the world pushing this kind of agenda where nothing should be in the hands of we the people. And again, I offer that challenge of, what is it that we used to do for ourselves, that my grandparents' generation, our grandparents, you know, invested in, built, and maintained for the use of we the people, that we then sold off to private interests because they told us they could do it better, faster, cheaper, more efficiently, all of those things that actually worked out to what they said it was going to be? Parking? let's ask my friends in Chicago. Nobody's thrilled with the parking system, or Harrisburg or Pittsburgh or a lot of major cities that, you know, strapped cities were going, hey, we need cash. Can't raise taxes because we took the Grover Pledge. So we're going to sell off parking. We're going to sell off water and sewer. We're going to sell off what we built for ourselves, highway systems. We're going to sell this stuff off to private corporations whose goal is not to provide a service. It's to make a profit. It's to cash in. So are we surprised then that they run it into the ground, suck as much out of it as they can, and then dump it back onto the backs of the taxpayers who then reinvest in it because we need it, only to then sell it off again? I mean, you go, how dumb are we? And as I've said, you know, this is not new. The war between capital and labor is not new. Private versus public, not new. It's just the other side has such, well, they've got the resources to promote it. When working people start talking to me about, you know, we need to have stronger, you know, austerity programs. We need the pendulum on the side of capital because they're the job creators. And you go, no, they're not. Most quote-unquote job creators are simply reacting to a market of consumers who demand something. You know, I had a very rich uncle who owned a business and said, look, if someone didn't demand my product, I'd be out of business. I'm going to serve. I don't do anything out of the goodness of my heart. I serve the demand. If you don't have the demand, there are no job creators. Which is why, you know, again, I go back to what Biden has done. Biden is investing in the country. The infrastructure bill, huge. The CHIPS Act, huge. In fact, on the CHIPS Act front, our friends over at CWA put out a press release today that pointed out that because of the CHIPS thing, because of the investment, they have signed a significant semiconductor manufacturing neutrality agreement with this Akash Systems. They make their chip maker. They announced a labor management neutrality agreement, which means that the union can organize the workers. If the workers want a union, the company's not going to stand in the way. They're not going to hold captive audience meetings. They're not going to fire people. They're not going to threaten people. They're not going to harass and intimidate. They're not going to do any of that. They're going to say, the workers want a union, there'll be a union there. And I say this is all because of Joe Biden. This is all because of Biden saying, look, we're going to make chips in this country. We're going to build factories in this country. And we're going to use union labor to do it. And what we're seeing in this instance, there will be union labor who are going to build the facilities. There will be union labor who will do the production. There will be union jobs to support people and to be able to make sure that we have family-sustaining wage jobs. Now, what's interesting to me is the CEO, the co-founder and CEO of Akash Systems, said Akash Systems is committed to investing in the American workers who will help us bring semiconductor production back home to the U.S. and build the foundation of innovation that will keep our country on the cutting edge. Do you think he'd be taking this position if Joe Biden hadn't, you know, kind of mandated that in the language, put that right in there front and center to go, hey, you're going to do this with American workers. You're going to do it with a project labor agreement. You're going to hire people who are going to make a decent wage so that it reverberates through the economy. This is the kind of stuff we need to be doing much more of, not gut and austerity and certainly not make things so small we drag it in the bathtub and drown it.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Mini ceasefire now extended 2 days beyond tonight, both sides releasing more captives. ABC's Matt Gutman in Tel Aviv says there's still a lot of questions.
We don't know much about the health of the remaining hostage, and that is a huge bone of contention for Israel. They are demanding that the Red Cross be given access to the remaining hostages. We believe it's around 150 at this point. A lot of them are men.
A man police say shot and wounded three college students of Palestinian descent has pled not guilty. He's been denied bail. Police accusing him of attempted murder, saying he shot those students out for a walk in Burlington, Vermont over the weekend. Hundreds turning out to salute Rosalynn Carter, whose body is lying in the Carter Center in Atlanta. Former First Lady's family has begun 3 days of memorials following her death. Her grandson, Jason Carter.
They did the things that they did in their lives, but they came back to this place where they lived and loved, and they didn't change.
This is ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Former Republican State Attorney General Brad Schimmel plans to be the first candidate to throw his hat in the ring to run for the next state Supreme Court election. He will be taking on Liberal Justice Ann Walsh Bradley in 2025. Schimmel was State Attorney General from 2015 to 2019 when he was defeated by the current Attorney General, Democrat Josh Call. Sources in the campaign tell the State Journal that Schimmel plans to formally enter the race on Thursday. Wisconsin commuters sound happy about the decision to add a second daily Amtrak round trip from Chicago through Milwaukee to St. Paul. Passenger Brady Scholten speaking with ABC News.
It'd be nice to have an earlier route that starts off, have that option to leave in the morning. It's just easier.
The second route is expected to launch sometime next year. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear tonight with lows around 6 above. Winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high of 26. Tomorrow night, lows around 20. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 15.
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
In touch with the City of Lakes. In touch with you. This is Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
They are saying, to help push back against right-wing politicizers of your school district, contact campaignsharedfuture.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, Donald Trump won't tell the Manhattan District Attorney who their experts are going to be. I guess there is a big battle going on who Trump plans to call in the case of the payments, the hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels. Who could that expert be? I gotta wonder. Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things where my mind just goes into weird places because hey. This is now our politics. We've got a chaos merchant running for president. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Maybe a little thought on the hush money. Our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. You want me to give you the first name?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Mike Pence. How's that? Is that believable?
No.
Now, wouldn't that be a trip, though? Come on.
That would be. No, look.
Oh, wow. And then John Bolton.
Yeah,
my
I don't
favorite.
Think so.
That's my favorite. So, yeah, right. Yeah. The Trump lawyers and the prosecutors are battling. It's just amazing. They're battling over the whole thing.
We'll see where it takes us. Again, it's all about the chaos. And look, I think this, again, is more of him just, you know, belittling the system. And you know, because for a certain segment of the base, him taking on the system is what they find, that's why we love the guy.
Well, you know, when this all started, I think it was right after the first one, we were talking about not so much what he was, you know, what they were going after him for, but I remember on your show we were talking about the process, what it was going to be like. And it's just going to be, you know, an endless series of everything is what's going to happen. And tactics, you know, it's the whole court system. I was reading the report today about the Florida judge, and kind of setting a standard for what's going to happen with the rest of them. Because you know what else is going to happen here, Rick? They're going to go into one court and say, well, wait a minute, we're in another court here. You know, we need time. You know, it's going to be like a domino.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's when you're in this deep, and you know, I was talking to somebody the other day because they have the belief that, you know, they're just piling on to poor Donald. And I'm going, no, not piling on. This is a guy who did a lot of stuff. There's a lot here.
Right. Well, the part of the problem is that with the perception that, you know, this all happened like planned, you know, it all happened at once. And a lot of people will say, well, why didn't they ask me? You know, why didn't it happen before? If they had something. Well, the whole process takes a while. He was involved in so many things. And then all of a sudden, you know, they start coming one by one. I mean, yep. There were so many things going down.
And look, if you're going to go after someone of his stature, you better be right. You better have the T's crossed and the I's dotted and ducks in a row and whatever else you want to throw out there. It better all be right.
Well, sure. And also, I mean, look, it tests the system because this is the first time in our country's history that a president has been indicted. So the whole thing tests the system is what happens. And then there's going to be established in the beginning of this. I mean, this is the other thing. What his lawyers are doing in almost all of these cases, inevitably, Rick, as you know, they're establishing grounds to appeal.
Correct.
That's what they're doing. From sure. day one, anything said, you know, does the judge say something? Does the judge do something? You know, the judge's hesitation to, you know, find him in contempt, everything is trying to establish grounds for future appeals, to appeal this thing, you know, out through a couple of years. Look, the whole motive here, not just, I'm not talking about what he's doing with Manhattan, but the whole motive is to have this all go and not be decided prior to the election.
Sure. So that he, you know, if he's elected, then, you know, maybe you can quash some of it.
Well, another thing, too, somebody once told me about 3 weeks ago that, well, no, you know, wouldn't you want this to be determined before the election, the decision? I'm like, absolutely not. Not in this case. No. No, not at all.
So you don't want the case decided before the election? You prefer
the... doubt. And then you know what they'll say? Well, if they had him certain on this, why isn't he being convicted before the election if they were certain? So this is all motive.
Yeah, no, good point. Yeah. You know, we'll see. I mean, personally, I'd like to see this over with by election time because I don't want him to be able to go and use the because I don't even know if he could or what that would look like. But here's the thing. You know, he's talking about he wants to use the military in an expanded role to go into cities and, you know, break up riots. And my mind goes to, I envision him going, you know, our election system's a mess, Bob. We're going to have to send in federal troops to oversee the elections. I can see that happening.
He has publicly said that, and this in itself blows my mind, when he publicly said, you know, they need to start going after, you know, these people that are going after him, the Justice Department. You know, the Congress needs to start doing that. It's just absolutely amazing. You know, normally you can't say those types of things. It would be obstruction of justice in any other case.
Yeah. Now, do we ever get back to what was normal? I mean, is there a reset possible to where this isn't, you know, 15 years ago, this was not normal. You didn't, this was not our politics. Look, was it perfect? No, but this is chaos for the sake of chaos.
Well, this is why you have one of the largest departures in the last, you know, X amount of years from the Congress. And if you're noticing the Republicans that are departing from the House, some of them, we know they've said that they're tired of it and they're tired of the chaos and they're tired of the, you know, circus type atmosphere.
Yeah,
some
but this, of them haven't this, said see, that. This is the part that bothers me in that. You know, then if you're tired of that, then why don't you reach across the aisle and go, look, I'm tired of this. Let's get something done so that you can then point to the other ones who are causing the chaos and going, they're the obstructions. You know, this is where I'm struggling with that.
Well, I can answer that. In previous times, that's what would happen. In previous times.
Right.
If there was an atmosphere of chaos when I was there in the Congress, and I know I sound like, you know, somebody, well, you're just old and you're saying, well, in my day, but it's true. When I was there, if people didn't like things like that, they did put together coalitions. The coalitions, they didn't come across as you're defying the speaker and the minority leader. They were just coalitions of what members wanted to do to keep the trains running, all right? And now, if you do, even if somebody has the intentions, some of these people that are leaving, even if they had the intention that was good and they wanted to do that, they will be absolutely brutalized, ostracized, money dumped in against them. This is a system where your litmus test now is, are you, quote, loyal?
Yeah, it's purity.
Are you loyal to MAGA? That's the litmus test. That didn't exist. There was no one entity. That didn't even exist with Reagan. You know, the kind of modern father of the Republican Party, it didn't exist.
Yeah, and you also didn't have the, you know, the 24-hour news cycle that, the kind of media outrage machine that we have today. And it's gotten worse over the last 5 years. I mean, You know, Fox used to, you know, take it up to a certain line. Now the stuff that I'm being exposed to is just out and out, you know, calling for anarchy and chaos, and not good.
True, and as my daughter actually was pointing out yesterday, we were having a conversation about this. You know, my daughter was saying, you know, she said, "Dad, you know, when you were there, you didn't have the entire social media structure either.
Yeah.
It wasn't." And it's true. I remember they sat us down in 1995, and they said, "Here, sit, click on this thing called the internet." I'm like, "Well, what's that?" You know, so we didn't have the whole infrastructure of social media and how it's coordinated, and you know, people spend money to run ads across it. We just didn't have that kind of thing.
Yeah. So Al Gore took credit for building it. Will he take credit for its destruction of democracy? That's what I want to know.
Like Frankenstein's child.
Yeah.
Right.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. I got to get your thoughts on the George Santos thing. There was talk over the weekend that he might resign. The Speaker, Mike Johnson, said that, you know, hey, you know, he's going to take some time, consider resigning, you know, because, you know, ultimately the Senate, the House is going to have to vote to expel him from what I understand. Any thoughts on if it's possible that he will resign? Maybe something they sweeten the pot with. Any thoughts on this?
Well, he hasn't been there long enough to have the expulsion potentially threaten, you know, say 20 years of a built-up pension or something, you know, of that nature. He hasn't had that. There's only been three members, if I remember right, expelled. I was sitting next to Traficant the night he was expelled. It was a very painful couple of hours. I remember, you know, very clearly. We were trying to tell Jim Traficant at the time from Ohio, who's now deceased, that, you know, you need to stop now. And he just kept moving on. Now, with Santos, it's a little bit different. I mean, as bad as Santos is, which is he is bad, once you have a problem in the court system, because I went through this too, where somebody said, "Well, you better step down, we're going to expel you." And I said, "Well, I'll step down after, you know, I'm ready to go through the legal system." And then at that point in time too, they were trying to get rid of people that worked for me. But eventually, you know, you step out. And with Santos, he hasn't had the plea deal or the conviction, but the House Ethics Committee has forwarded, you know, a formal expulsion. So it's okay, I guess, now, I think, to go ahead and expel him. The reason I say that is they've got to be very careful. Senator Menendez is under, you know, he's been indicted, et cetera. And I don't think anybody would have the right to expel him because he has not gone through the court system. But this case is a little bit different because of the House Ethics Committee report and investigation that has been finished. It makes it a little bit different. Now, here's one big question, Rick, is, you know, does he have the two-thirds vote he needs two-thirds to expel him. Is it there?
That's the question. I don't know. Will Democrats now vote to save Republicans again?
I was just going to say, one thing the Democrats could do, some of them, enough of them, is to say, "I'm not voting yes or no." They knew what he was like. They knew what he was doing. Now why are they waiting to the election year to do something? And then just don't do it. Santos needs to stay in for the paycheck. And then don't provide enough votes. And then what are the Republicans going to turn around and say, "Look what you're doing, you Democrats. You know, you're supporting Santos." No, we're voting present.
Yeah.
Because you created this mess. You didn't take care of it. And we're not going to sit here and you know, do this now. I mean, you could do that. And then they're stuck with him.
Yeah, I keep saying Democrats need to stop bailing them out. It when they threw Marjorie train wreck off of her committees. I said, "I don't know why you're going to do that. Leave her there. I want her there."
Right. And you know, it's like if Matt Gaetz got in trouble, the last thing the Democrats will want to do is to help get him out of there.
Nope.
You want to keep him.
No.
You know, so he's on TV every day.
Yeah. Well, I gotta get your thoughts on Thursday's big debate. Did you know there's a big debate on Thursday?
No.
evidently, this is being billed by the Fox folks, Sean Hannity in particular, that this is red state versus blue state. Again, red hat, blue hat. Evidently, DeSantis and Gavin Newsom, they're going to have what's been billed as a Herculean clash of red versus blue. Are you going to tune in?
No, I have actually heard about this. I actually thought it was part of the Onion joke. You know, the Onion group that does all the...
I love the Onion.
Yeah, I thought it was that.
No, this is supposed to be what the presidential race should have been had, you know, the two old guys not been involved.
Now, why would they pick... Here's the other thing. I mean, if you were, you know... Because Hannity was doing this, right? This is all Hannity. Right. And then Hannity will be the umpire, I guess, for the two governors. Now, of course, the way they do it is, well, you've got two governors. Because if you were Nikki Haley or Vivek Ramaswamy, wouldn't you start screaming about this? That you should have been in there?
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing.
Although it's going to look silly, the whole thing.
And then, if you're Gavin Newsom, why are you doing this?
Yeah, now that is my question I'm going to actually ask. I can see DeSantis doing it because, contrary to what all my friends say, DeSantis is going down the tubes.
Yep.
I don't care what they say.
I think he's already down the tube. But I think if you're Newsom, you think, hey, I need to up my profile a little bit just in case. You know, in case of, you know, emergency break glass kind of thing. That's the only thing I can take out of it. He's not going to challenge Biden in the primary. But if something were to happen, you know, he's already on the trail. He's already got some, you know, some things going on. That's where my mind was at.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way they built this in one of the articles, and I think it was Politico or The Hill, one of the two, they billed it that Newsom was the biggest surrogate speaker for Biden and for the White House.
Okay.
And he tangled, you know, and had this, you know, whole deal with Hannity, which I must say, he really did a good job.
No, he was good,
right?
I think he's going to mop the floor with DeSantis because I don't think DeSantis is good in these spaces. I think I just don't think he is. I don't think he can articulate his points very well.
Right. Well, because... everybody, even the conservatives, were saying, wow, you know, Newsom just really gave Hannity a run for his money. I heard it, you know, a ton of times. So, you know, he is kind of the top Biden White House, you know, spokesperson out there amongst the governors. And so he would have a chance, if he did this, to defend Biden and also to bring out his record, you know, in California. And so maybe... this is kind of a moment for him to, you know, put himself in there just in case, but also in there for the next run in 4 years.
Yeah, I'm a little miffed at Newsom over some of his, you know, his vetoes of labor legislation.
Oh, yeah. Right. He did.
And look, I understand on a certain level, you gotta keep those tech billionaires happy if you're planning on running for president. But if you want my vote, you got to do a better job than what he's done so far. At least that's my thought. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I'm probably not going to pay much attention to it because I really cannot stand DeSantis, and just to listen to him, and I know I should because this is what I do, but I'm just not. I'm not interested in it.
You know, the other thing. Look, this is a win for Hannity.
Oh yeah,
it's a win for him. It really is.
Oh, absolutely.
Because now he's bringing a Democrat on his show, and you know he's out there trying to, you know, provide both sides a voice out there, and he's Hannity and he's an ultra-right conservative, but look what he's doing to, you know, to bring, quote, debate to the forefront. So, you know, Hannity does okay on that.
Yeah, and here's what the message on Friday will be. Hannity helped put the stake in DeSantis's campaign.
Yeah, exactly, actually, right.
Because I think Newsom's going to mop the floor with him. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on, evidently, we're going after Obamacare again.
Right. In my news notes that I put out to the stations today, I put, yeah, as you know, I put snarky comments here and every once in a while. This one I couldn't help it, and after the headline, I put good luck. That was my comment. Good luck, because first of all, Trump promised beyond the wall. He promised to do something on the rebuild. The Senate Republicans promised to do that. The House Republicans promised to do it. They had control of the government, and they didn't do it. They didn't do it, you know? And as a result of that, they're not going to be able to do it again, especially now, if they control the House. They can't do it. So this reminds me of the Kennedy papers, too. You know, he's going to release the Kennedy papers. Yeah. He released, most of it or some of it. And then Biden did the same follow-up, most of it or some of it. And then Trump came back and said, well, if I'm elected again, I'm going to release it. Well, he didn't release it all the first time.
Yeah. No.
And it's like Obamacare. They're not going to do anything. It is literally, I would bet anything of anybody that would like to bet on the fact that he could actually, if he wins, and you have a Republican House and Senate, that he can actually do that. He can't. It's virtually impossible. The system would completely come unglued.
Yeah, but don't you think that's kind of the plan? I mean, the fact that he came out and said, if he's reelected, he's going to use the military in a more expanded role. Evidently, we're going to be sending them into Democratic cities to stop bad things from happening. So then my mind immediately goes, and maybe here's something, because I said this earlier. My concern is if he does get away with this, then eventually we start seeing federal troops in polling places because, the last election was stolen, according to him. So we need, we need the military in there to make sure everything's on the up and up, which is illegal, but I could see him wanting to do that.
Well, or if he gets elected and he serves 4 years, he turns around and says, it's an emergency. The country needs me for four more. I'm not going to leave. I'm just going to stay here.
Wow.
Which is about what happened last time. So.
Yeah. We will see. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the thoughts.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, I'm fixated on the possibility that could possibly happen. And look, what we see coming out of legislatures across the country. What we see coming out of city councils, horrible stuff. Democracy in action is all about, undoing the 20th century. And you remember when Roe happened? And look, I've been saying for at least 10 years that conservatives wanted to undo Roe. They wanted to make abortion illegal. And then eventually they were going to go after Griswold because can't have contraception, can't do that. And then eventually they were going to go after, same-sex marriage and all of those things. We were going to, put women back in the kitchen, blacks back in the fields and gays back in the closet. And I got a bunch of people back then, saying, no, you're crazy. We've decided that. That could never happen. No one would allow such a thing. Well, the city of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a college town, oddly enough, back in June enacted an ordinance outlawing what they call indecent exposure, public indecency, lewd behavior, nudity, or sexual conduct. And what you got were a bunch of LGBT community folks going, hey, that's kind of the same language they used back in the old days to go after us. And understand the moneyed interests that are pushing this kind of stuff. We're beginning to see the billionaire money going into funding crazy grassroots groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom, evidently a right-wing Christian hate group, which I don't like throwing that together, but it kind of is what it is. They're a group that was founded back, I think it was like back in the 90s. Christians in the community fighting to restrict abortion rights, ban books and gay people. That's their cause. And that's what they've been trying to orchestrate. And they're now citing the 1873 Obscenity Act, called the Comstock Act, which prohibited, sending artifacts in the mail and things like that. But, you know, it's obscenity laws. They're citing that as the ability to go and make this stuff illegal, which means, you know, in this little town, it's open season. And a question I have is, look, you know, it's not my issue, but, you know, first they came for the fill in the blank, and then they came for you. When do we stop them in their march towards Christian Sharia law? When do we stop the radical right? Look, I'm against extremism on all sides. When do we stop it? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, download the podcast. Always there, always available. As we tick down to our final live radio broadcast on Friday, I want to hear your thoughts. Share some thoughts with us. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Thanks for being here.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.